Fine. Good morning to you, and Mr. Begley. Good morning to you. Do either counsel have any questions before we begin? Ms. Line, you may then approach and you may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. May it please the court, Chief Justice, Your Honors, counsel. My name is Lisa Line, and I'm appearing on behalf of Mark Walker, the appellant in this case. He's one of four sons of Rita Walker. He was nominated as personal representative under decedent's September 15, 2021 will. This is regarding his appeal of the county court order denying the admission of that will into probate. Now, a small amount of context. Rita died at age 84 in September, at the end of September 2021. She had been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer the month before. She died in the home that she had shared with her husband, Elmer, through his death in 2013, and with her son, Mark, who had stayed with her in 2013 to help her with her husband and continued on because she didn't want to be alone in the home. Mark has always been fully employed. He maintained his own home separately from her and paid her bills and participated in paying part of her bills until he sold his home and then applied the proceeds of that home to her mortgage that she had taken out to rescue one of her other sons. The will in this case was executed 2 weeks before she passed away. The court did determine that the will was validly executed.
Did the court also determine that your client failed to prove that the decedent had testamentary capacity?
Your Honor, I believe that the record shows that there was a prima facie case of testamentary capacity, and then there was a decision that it was subject to undue influence and lack of testamentary capacity, which was on the receiving end. So that's how I interpreted the order of the court, which identified that this will that did have attestation clauses, it did have an acknowledgement clause, it was not signed with a second witness, which would have made it It was not a self-proved will, and I'm not arguing that it is a self-proved will, but it did have the basic attestation clause that identified that it was her free and voluntary act.
On page 48 of our transcript,
yes,
which is the trial court's original order.
Yes, Your Honor.
Doesn't it say that the court finds that the proponent of the will did not meet their burden regarding the capacity of the testator?
Yes, she did. She did state that, Your Honor. The lower court did state that in the order at the end of that particular order.
And you've not assigned any error to that capacity, that determination, have you?
Your Honor, I do believe that our third element of error, which was related to the failure to admit in a broader sense, the document into the will into probate, I believe that our argument did include that particular element in more broad sense, because the focus was on testamentary, was undue influence combined with capacity, and those can be viewed together.
Okay, now with respect to, I think, is it fair to state that a great deal of your argument depends on the court's refusal to admit Exhibit 7.
Yes, Your Honor.
And Exhibit 7 is a purported earlier will?
Correct.
Or at least the document.
It's a will document. It was executed by her in front of a notary.
It wouldn't be a valid will in terms of the requirements for attestation of a will, correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
So you're making a hearsay argument that it wasn't hearsay because it spoke to her testamentary intent, her plan at this earlier time, right?
Correct.
Now, what evidence in the record is there about her capacity at that earlier time?
The evidence in the record regarding her capacity at the earlier time, that was shortly after she executed the deed, the trustee's deed related to her home and the mortgage that's saved her one son. The record also, there were specific questions on the record, and I can't point to the exact line and page that included questions whether or not she was in control of her assets and taking care of everything at that point, whether there was any question regarding her confusion or inability to take care of herself.
Let me follow up and interrupt, and I apologize to you both, but how relevant is that given her, quote, decline?
I believe that the record does show that the decline was within the last month. That if there was a decline as far as physical decline, but there is no evidence regarding a mental decline. None of the parties testified that she was confused. The witness specifically identified that the independent witness specifically identified that he had known the family. He was in the Air National Guard with her husband, that he had known she and her husband for over 40 years. 40 years at the time of Elmer's death, 50 years at the time of the will signing. And that he felt that based on the general conversation that they were having, that she was of sufficient capacity, and she understood that she was signing a will. She understood that she wanted this to be done. He watched her read the document, and he felt that she was capable of signing at that time.
So the trial court, as the trier of fact, had the ability to accept or reject that testimony, right?
Correct.
And how do we then relate that to the express finding that your client failed to establish testamentary capacity?
Your Honor, regarding the finding to establish testamentary capacity, when we're looking at a longstanding, she has this, she had longstanding preferred Mark, wanted him to help her. This is throughout, even up until the end, wanted him to assist her, and he did assist her with all of her financial expenses. He did provide contributions to her. And at the end, the document that was ultimately signed matches almost exactly the testamentary intentions that were in the 2016 document. So as far as capacity, it goes to testamentary intent, that she had a longstanding goal, that she knew she was dying, and she had asked to get her will done.
You understand, you would agree that we do not review that decision de novo.
Agreed.
Okay. So I know your time is dwindling, and there's one other issue I want to ask you about. You had sought a new trial on the ground related to Exhibit 7.
Correct.
And the trial court denied your motion for new trial, and it said something that the court finds if it was error, referring to not admitting Exhibit 7, such that such error was harmless. What did you understand the court to be articulating in that finding?
I believe that the court had originally identified the two elements that we had articulated during our motion for new trial, which were the admission of Exhibit 7 and the financial contributions of Mark, to be wholly irrelevant. You know, that was the description provided within the body of that order related to her ultimate will and whether it was a product of undue influence and lack of capacity.
Thank you.
And Your Honors, respectfully, we would request that this case be remanded down for minimum a new trial related to Exhibit 7 and comment regarding and with instructions related to related to the relevancy and admission of that evidence. So it would at least be considered.
Well, the evidence, since you hold it up, Exhibit 7 is in our record, so we know what it says. Wouldn't if we were to buy in that it was required some kind of remand, wouldn't it just be for reconsideration of its decision upon the record, including Exhibit 7? Why do you get a new trial, I guess is what I'm trying to suggest.
Yes, Your Honors. It could obviously, it could be just remanded for admission of Exhibit 7 and consideration of Exhibit 7 in relation to the record already in place.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Begley, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice and everyone. I'm David Begley, attorney for Mike Walker, the personal representative of the estate of Rita Walker. I want to start out with a question that Justice Castle asked, which was basically, you didn't assign as heir the lack of capacity issue. And I know from reading your decisions over the years that you have a head note, a rule of law that says if assignment of heir is not assigned or argued or articulated or argued in the brief, then we're not going to look at that. And I think there's a fair statement to conclude that the appellant didn't assign the capacity issue, and so therefore that's off the table.
And if that be the case, where does that leave us?
Well, affirming on that issue, that's for sure, because the trial court judge, she wrote that there was essentially no evidence on capacity, and the trial court judge has cited NJI, and Mark, the appellant, has that burden of proof, and it was on him to prove that that there was capacity. And as somebody previously noted, that the will wasn't self-proved, and so therefore he had to prove up and down that there was capacity.
You would agree that capacity could be proved by circumstantial evidence?
I don't know that I would go that far, because
doesn't the law treat direct and circumstantial evidence interchangeably?
Well, there was evidence. I mean, the only independent witness, Tom Casper, I cross-examined. I mean, it's in the record here. What did Rita Walker say on the day the will was signed on September 15th? He said, "How are you?" And she grunted. Well, that's a bad sign. And then, I mean, there are questions that could have been put to Mrs. Walker. And as an aside, when I was a young associate, I can remember witnessing a will, and the senior lawyer asked, you know, "Do you understand you are signing a will? You know, what is the nature of your property? What is the value and nature of your estate? Do you know you have four sons? Do you realize that three sons are not getting a thing?" And those are the kind of questions when it looks like there's some issue about capacity, because Mrs. Walker, she was on hospice 2 days before the will was signed. And I'll also add that Mike Walker, my client, I specifically put the question to him, and I said, "Do you have an opinion about your mother's capacity to make this will on September 15th? And he said, "She was not capable."
Your opponent has argued that Exhibit 7, which was not received but was offered, is evidence of a prior intent to dispose of the property in the same fashion.
Well, I would say a couple things about that. That will was from 2016. Well, first of all, I want to make one thing clear. That was not a will, and something like a will is not a will.
Does it make a difference under our law? Because we've talked about instruments. We haven't always talked about a will. If it was a letter, for example, to the decedent's sister saying, I'm talking about at the time of the execution of Exhibit 7, that said, "I'm going to leave my property all to my son, Mark, who's taking care of me." Would that be admissible under the
the hearsay exception and the case law that we have?
Well, I think 27-8033, it has to be a will. I mean, the cases that I looked at where the court let in prior wills, and they were usually shorter in time, the prior will was executed, it has to be a will, not just a piece of paper. Now, I can remember, I can't remember the name of the case, but you had a case within the last couple of years where somebody was scheduled to be with their lawyer, and he wrote a note, the lawyer wrote a note in the file, and you said, no, that's not good enough as a will. Or I can't remember all the details.
It may not be a will, but it might be relevant.
Well,
admissible under all the hearsay.
Well, the trial court judge held that it was both hearsay and irrelevant. And that kind of reading, or that ruling by a trial court judge, that's, you have your standard, which is...
Relevancy is not a very high standard.
Well, the trial court made that finding. Your standard is it won't be reversed on evidentiary ruling unless it unfairly prejudiced the other side and the ruling was clearly untenable.
Haven't we said in the context of hearsay that we review hearsay for the facts for clear error and the ultimate determination of hearsay and in the admission or refusal of an exhibit de novo?
Well, I got to admit, I'll have to
assume we said that.
Yeah, I don't know that that's the law. I mean, I need to research that part of the case, but.
Where does that take us?
Well, you know, you mentioned, I mean, you know, what's the remedy here? If Exhibit 7 is admissible and you reverse the trial court's finding, then that comes in and I would have the opportunity to question Mark Walker extensively about the facts and circumstances of that will.
So you're advocating that there'd be, if we found error in the refusal to admit Exhibit 7, you think there's a new trial necessary?
Why? I never want to concede that, but...
it was sort of sounding like...
No. I know that's been done in different cases. Okay. Let me put it that way.
Let me ask you about the order denying the motion for new trial. You heard me recite the language from the order about harmless error.
Right.
What did you understand the trial court to be saying in that order?
I would put this to the court, which is looking over all the facts and circumstances, the record as the whole, it's not going to make any difference because the focus has to be what happened on September 15th. Did Mrs. Walker have capacity and was she unduly influenced? And on both those elements, we're not admitting that will the September 15th will. I mean, this 2016 will, or its so-called will, is just a minor element of this entire case, which brings me to the dramatic testimony of Nurse Leslie Royal, which was 2 years before Mrs. Walker passed away, where Mark Walker said to his mother, "You will do what you are told to do, or I will take you out of here and you will die at home."
And that goes more to your undue influence.
Right.
Isn't it? Rather than capacity.
Yeah, but I mean, there's two things here. I mean, she was both unduly influenced and she didn't have capacity. And Mrs. Walker was susceptible. The testimony from Nurse Royal was, she was crying, nervous, visibly shaking, and scared. And I cite in the brief, your rule of law is undue influence isn't exercised in a crowd. And this was the one instance, you know, she lived with Mark. This was the one instance where somebody could see that Mark was really a controlling person.
Exhibit 7 was signed long before the event that you're describing at the nursing home, right?
Correct. Well, which I want to get into a little bit more. I mean, Mark Walker had a plan and a pattern of conduct to wire this estate in favor of himself. He had the secret will signing. His brothers were in and out of the house, you know, at the time of, you know, September 13th, when she was put on hospice. They weren't invited. Say, hey, brothers, you know, we'll get together and we'll sign this will where Mark gets everything. He pulled it down off the internet and he drafted it. So he gets everything. His friend notarizes it. And one thing that was somewhat disturbing was, you know, there was this probate system 5 document, which was altered. And it says mom's longstanding desire for Mark to get everything. Steve or one brother signed it and the other one didn't. He says, because that was never my understanding that Mark was to get everything. That's not what mom said. And then during the trial, he answered, you know, Mark Walker answered to a question. He says, well, this is what my mom wanted. And I objected because it was non-responsive and that was sustained. So that was stricken from the record. So Mark was always angling for a long period of time to get everything.
Well, isn't there considerable evidence in the record that he's the one that took care of his mother and it's not irrational that she would want to give him everything?
Well, I would say this, Chief Justice. You know, there was discussion in the appellee's brief or appellant's brief about this $135,000 line of credit. But know that Mark, as part of that, got 3 undeveloped lots in a residential subdivision in West Omaha and a building. So he came out well ahead on the money angle with the promissory note and the mortgage, but I'll say it's a little murky. Well, here's another thing I'll add. It's a best practice, and I know it's in the record. You know, if a child's going to take care of a parent, you know, have something signed in advance that we're putting a value on this. And, you know, he files this $300,000 claim against the estate for caring for his mother, and it was all,
well, him. Just to be fair, he hadn't filed a claim yet, had he? He had disclosed in the petition that he may have a claim.
Well, that's...
Isn't that a more precise way of articulating it?
You are right, Justice Castle. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal, counsel. That concludes... arguments in In Re Estate of Walker, so you are excused. And that concludes arguments for today, so the court is adjourned.